This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Tens of thousands of African Americans called Appalachia home in the early 20th century. And you may not have known that because most popular representations of that region rarely include details about the black experience. One young researcher is trying to remedy this through an archival project that started with the story of her own family. Carita Brown grew up in New York, but her parents are from Lynch, Kentucky. It's one of the many formerly thriving towns that once sat at the heart of Kentucky's coal country. Her new project examines the history and culture of the area and captures the stories of more than 200 people who still call that place home. An exhibit of her work is currently on view at UNC Chapel Hill's Wilson Library. It's called Gone Home, Race and Roots Through Appalachia. And Carita Brown joins me in the studio now for a preview. Carita, welcome to State of Things. Good to have you here.
Oh, good to be here.
Tell us how this project got started.
Wow. So I'm a PhD candidate at Brown University in the sociology department. And when it was time for me to start putting together my dissertation project, I thought that I'd naturally follow something in organizational sociology because my background is in business. Well, early into my program, my father invited me to come back to Lynch, Kentucky, where he and my mother grew up, because I hadn't been there in over 10 years. And I went home and I sat on my grandmother's porch and I looked around and, you know, all my childhood memories of this small community that meant so much to me as a child just started flooding back. And I realized that the town was a third the size that I remember it being when I was a child. And that had only been a 10 to 15 year period. And I said, you know, this might not be here for the next generation. And what can I do to reconstruct the history of not only this place, but the people that once made it so beautiful?
Well, tell us a little bit about Lynch and the communities surrounding it. Maybe we'll go back to the history. How did it become the community that you would go home to and have these memories of?
Right. So in the early 20th century, in the pre-World War I era, large steel companies such as U.S. Steel and International Harvester came into the central Appalachian region of Kentucky. So we're talking bloody Harlan County. Mm-hmm. And they established these company-owned towns. So Lynch, Kentucky, Benham, Kentucky, and Cumberland, Kentucky are kind of the three towns that I focus on in my research in Harlan County. And during the time where these towns were formed, the companies went all over the world, particularly to Southern Europe, but also to Alabama to recruit African-American men to come mine the coal in that region.
Tell us, I'm going to stop you there. Tell me more about that recruitment strategy. What was behind that?
So my research showed that the companies use this intentional strategy called judicious mixture.
Judicious mixture. Go ahead.
Yeah, in which they would try to come up with a formulation of recruitment along ethnic and racial lines that would kind of thwart unionization efforts. So for the black population, the company never brought in more than 10% blacks. But they would also do the same for the Yugoslavian population, Slovenians, Hungarians, and on and on and on.
And also deliberately went directly to those countries before they got here and had any aspiration or understanding of what kind of salaries they could be getting. They dipped right into Southern Europe.
Absolutely. And they used labor agents to do so. So for the African-Americans, we'll use Lynch for an example. There is a famous man named Limehouse, and he was the labor agent that brought most black families in the early period to Lynch, Kentucky. And he had a watermelon truck. And he'd go to Alabama and make arrangements with men to sneak them off of whether they were working on a plantation, doing sharecropping, or if they got themselves in a convict labor situation. And he would sneak them out of Alabama and bring them to Kentucky.
This judicious, what was it?
Mixture.
Judicious mixture includes 10% African-American. It seems to me they could have filled that 10% easily with Southern Europeans. Why include African-Americans?
Well, historically, African-Americans particularly in the coal mining industry, can be used as scab labor, meaning that if there are strikes, they use the black labor to kind of fill in the strikes and break the strikes. But also because in this particular situation in the Harlan County context, the men, Alabama had coal mines.
So there was some experience.
So there was some experience. And Alabama also was the last state in the U.S. South to stop using the convict leasing system. So you had a population of black men who were already being used as labor in coal mines for free. So it was easy to kind of make that sell to have an opportunity to become a working class citizen.
Well, this is an oral history project. You did a lot of interviews, and that we're going to listen to a little bit of one of those interviews now to get a sense of what it was like to work at a company town.
So we grew up with outstanding schools. We also had socialized medicine. So we had dental services and all those kinds of things from the outset, because the corporation, United States Steel, out of necessity, wanted to keep those miners healthy.
How involved was U.S. Steel in your everyday life?
Very involved, not so much with us as children, but very much involved with the experiences of our parents, because they owned everything. They owned everything. And so decisions, you could not live in the housing without, you know, without abiding with the standards that United States Steel had established. And if by chance a spouse, a husband, was deceased, then that lady could no longer live in those houses and so forth. But they had a tremendous oversight, impact, and influence on what happened in those communities.
Now, that was Jerome Ratchford. He was born and raised in Lynch, Kentucky, now lives in Atlanta. And his interview is one of more than 200 captured in the Eastern Kentucky African-American Migration Project that's now housed at UNC's Southern Historical Collection. And I'm talking with the woman who put it all together, Carita Brown, who founded the project. So tell us again about your sort of evolution. You didn't grow up there. Mm-hmm. You grew up visiting there. So talk about these visits back to this place where you grew up.
During my parents' generation, and like I mentioned, my mother and father grew up there, it was customary for children to graduate high school and the next day to migrate to another city across the United States. And this happened concomitantly with what's known as the African-American Great Migration, right? So my parents moved to New York and raised my brother and I there. But every Memorial Day weekend since I was in my mother's womb, my parents made sure to take us back to Lynch, Kentucky, where they grew up. And it wasn't just my family. This was a tradition in the community. So all these black families that grew up in Benham, Lynch, and Cumberland come back for Memorial Day weekend. And for that weekend, if you and I were neighbors growing up, we'd be neighbors again in our family homes, because it's important to remember that the company left a lot of those homes to those families when they deserted the area. So a lot of families still own their home houses. And during Memorial Day weekend, there would be tons of festivities in the ballparks and barbecuing, and all the families would be reconnecting. And I just grew up thinking that on Memorial Day weekend, everybody went back to their ancestral home and resurrected communities that had gone away.
Well, Richard Brown is your father. He is with you today. He's also was born and raised in Lynch and also served as Carita's assistant throughout this process, and he is here today. Richard, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, tell us about growing up in Lynch.
Well, it was a very close-knit family. That's the easiest way to put it, the most way you can understand it. It was a small town, and we lived down in the valley, surrounded by the mountains. And everybody knew everybody, and if you did something wrong, they will give you a beating. meaning your neighbor, not your mom. And then after that, they will get in touch with your parents and say, I just whooped Richard for XYZ. And on your way home, you're crying because you know you're going to get it another one when you get home. And today, parents believe everything the kids tell them.
Yeah.
And my mom, my dad, if a grown-up beat you, you couldn't go there. I couldn't go there and say, they did this and they didn't. They don't hear that. Yeah. You get extra licks
for
that.
That would just be worse, right?
Yeah. And you just couldn't get away with anything. It was a good part of it and it's a bad part. Mm. The good part of it was just kept you in line and kept your morals and kept you on the straight and kept you out of trouble. The bad part about it, you couldn't get in no trouble and that ain't no fun.
Well, there's a lot of people who seem to agree with you, and I know that you found a lot of this, Carita found a lot of this when she did her interviews. We could confirm this with Brenda Combs, who's one of the people you talked with.
Everybody was your parent. I mean, everybody could tell you what to do, when to do it, when not to do it, you know, and if you did something wrong, they could actually spank you, and you, oh gosh, you were really in trouble when you got back home. If you walked around the street 100 times, you had to say hello to everybody sitting on their porch in their yard 100 times. Even till this day, you still have to do that. Everybody knew everybody, and everybody watched out for everybody. You didn't have to lock your doors. You know, you can leave your doors open.
As you say, that's the good part of it. But there was this mandate. There was this maybe it was an overt understanding that everybody who would the kids they'd graduate from high school. And they'd be gone by the following weekend, right?
Yes. Well, that started with the father, because working in the coal mine, if you was to see what they had to endure, my father said to all the boys, my brothers, that I don't want you to work in this coal mine. It's too dangerous. It's just depleting.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I want it better for you. Get your education and get out. So it was just known because I graduated on a Friday. On a Saturday, I was on the bus to New York.
And you weren't alone.
No, I was not alone. The bus was full. People that I knew that graduated with me was on that bus too. And then we went to different places. We went to New York, we went to Cleveland. It was just you getting out of there. And so you wouldn't be tempted to work in the mines. So that was automatic. And not just my family, that was a tradition, it seemed like to me. That was just automatic. You got to go.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. You can imagine trying to make a living for your family, but hoping they don't have to endure the same hardship, so off they go. So Carita, why come back? Tell us what you learned as a researcher about these reunions.
Oh, man. So my research really is centered around the concept of home. And what I learned is whatever it is that they got from that close-knit community and that upbringing in Kentucky stayed with them and really defines some part of their being. And many participants will describe it that way, that a piece of my soul rests in those mountains. So there's something about the landscape and the experiences and the shared history, joy and pain, that draws these people back. So it's common to say, you know, when I, at the end of each interview, I touch my heart and I ask my participants, where's home for you? And a common response is, well, I live in XYZ city, but Lynch will always be my home.
I think that's something that Cynthia Brown Harrington probably confirms in your interview with her.
I looked forward to going home. I used to put my vacation in. I think I went home at least 25 years in a row straight. Yes, that and the reunions. That camaraderie to see each other. And there's not many people in the world that do that. And when I tell people about it, it's unreal to them. They was like, y'all actually go back like that? Sure we do. It's good to see kids that you went to school with. It was great to see your old teachers, your friends, to go to church and remember singing the songs, being baptized. It was good. It was just a connection to the whole community. And Kentucky at that time of the year is beautiful. Mm-hmm. is really picturesque. And you know, when you're young and you're growing up there, you didn't really see all that. But once you left and came back, you saw the beauty of it.
That is Cynthia Brown Harrington, born and raised in Lynch, Kentucky, now lives in Greensboro, North Carolina. Her interview is one of more than 200 captured in the Eastern Kentucky African American Migration Project. It's housed at UNC's Southern Historical Collection at the Wilson Library at UNC, and I'm talking with Carita Brown, who founded the project, and her father, Richard Brown, who has helped her along the way. And I guess you did the driving for most of this trip, because Carita's, you don't trust her behind the wheel, apparently.
Well, no.
Listen, tell me about how things have changed in Lynn since you grew up there.
Wow, man, it's just totally different now. Because when I grew up, it was, like I said, it was a close-knit community. It's still close-knit, but it just, people has deceased and passed on, and and it just diminishing. And now it's only, when I was growing up, maybe it was maybe about 8,000 people. Now it's only about 400.
Wow.
And now since the Bears has taken over down there, they just walk the street.
No, oh, right.
And you, the only thing, there's nothing to do but sit on your porch, walk around the street in the daytime, and admire the beauty of the mountains. And you feel the love that comes from even the stones and the buildings. It just, that love just fill you. And it just gives you a great feeling on the inside. And it's sad that it's only memories now and not actually the way it used to be.
But those memories are being captured, Carita. Tell us about the importance of this oral history project.
Yeah, so the oral history has really revivified this history that stood a chance to kind of slip through the cracks with this generation that holds the story. So one thing that ECAMP does, the Eastern Kentucky African American Migration Project, is helps to document the history and culture of this generation. What my father and I have done over the last 3 years is traveled from city to city across the United States. We've hit over 30 cities across 13 states in the country, and conducted over 200 oral history interviews in the homes of the folks who grew up there. And my role as an oral historian as a researcher is just to create that space. And as you can hear from the audio clips, I don't have to do much but turn the mic on, and the love and the memories start to flow. And they are very intimate and conversational. And I think that there's something about the fact that I am a third generation descendant of this population. So although most people don't know me personally when I first encounter them, there's a trust and exuberance to pass on that history to the next generation. And through this oral history project, they will be publicly available. So that next generation of descendants as well as researchers will be able to use these oral histories.
It's a real participatory archive, right?
Yes.
Contributing online and it's more than just oral history. What else is involved?
So I thought that this would just be an oral history project, but the my elders, they always tell me what's going to happen. I don't have much control. So they started giving me stuff early in the process. After an interview, it would be very common for a participant to go to their attic or basement and pull out the most beautiful and rare documents or photos, or lumps of coal, whatever they thought I would need to get the story right. And I, after a while, just couldn't in good conscience keep them in my basement. And that is how I partnered with the Southern Historical Collection at the Wilson Library. And thankfully, they are the best in the business, and they've allowed the space for this participatory archive to exist there.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program, Carita Brown and her father, Richard Brown. Carita's project is the Eastern Kentucky African American Migration Project. It's a collaboration with the Southern Historical Collection, and it is on view at UNC Chapel Hill's Wilson Library through August 20th. You can find a link at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, author David Payne plumbs the depths of his own soul through a family memoir. Stay tuned.